Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. As here in the Midwest, we enter into the fall, though we've had 71 degrees today. I think they said it was going to cool down again, but it's going to warm up. With the delight of our baby olive baboon, because she loves to go outdoors, and when it's 60 degrees or colder, she's not allowed to do that. So we're hoping we can get a little bit more warm temperatures as we enter into the month of October. This is also a very special night, because this just happens to be, everybody, and we thank all of our listeners and underwriters, the second anniversary of Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. 2 years, 104 shows. It's hard to believe, but we're still here. We've got some great ones, and we encourage everyone to go into the archives and listen to our shows from the past. We've had some dandies, and tonight is no exception, because joining us in a few moments will be the reptile guy from the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Doug Hodel will be with us, and we'll be talking snakes and lizards and crocs and all sorts of slithery stuff. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, and Wayne Larson, our technical engineer, and handling the music responsibilities, Jim Johnson, and from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and somewhat lucid, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
And good evening, Mr. Batson. You're going to make me blush.
Well, that's hard to do for you.
Yeah, it is. It really is hard to do.
Yeah,
well, what's going on there at Wildlife Educational Services this evening?
Well, it's kind of a quiet night, waiting to feed the baby baboon after our broadcast tonight, and taking it easy, and everything's good, as far as I know. I don't want to change it.
Are the alligators in yet?
Oh, no. No. See, we've got that planned out. We wait till we know it's going to be cold for a while, and we wait till it's a 40-degree, 35-degree day to move them, because it's like moving sacks of potatoes. You don't have to fight them. Then you put them in a warm building, they heat up, and then everything's good again. So we've learned that after years of doing alligator battles in 70-degree weather. So... But I'll tell you what, Dr. Day, I will call you, and you can help participate in those activities.
Well, you know, I would love to do that.
Well, the moving of I know you would. So we'll do that, absolutely. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www. Got a pencil? LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES 4140 North 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana. That's one word, Greencastle. 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for September 29th. Now, hopefully tonight we'll be able to get through our broadcast without any problems. And you're wondering, if you're wondering why that is, well, a strong solar storm reached the Earth this last Monday. Now, scientists say it poses a threat to satellites and radio communication.
Oh.
So hopefully won't have any problems. Now, a solar or geomagnetic storm takes place when the sun blasts charged particles that reach the Earth's atmosphere. Now, so far, no communications have been disrupted, but more solar storm activity is expected over the next several days. And the only good thing about this is if you can see the northern lights, the aurora borealis, they should be spectacular.
So what happened to the thing that was supposed to crash to Earth, the satellite?
Well, apparently it did come down.
Yep.
And no one was injured. But we've got another one coming down in the next week or so.
Oh.
And there's another couple, 200,000 of them up there just waiting to make that same appearance.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. All right. Well, we're going to start out in Barcelona tonight. Bully for the Bulls, the end of a tradition in Spain. Spain's top matadors gathered Saturday for a final weekend of bullfighting before the sport is banned in the northeast Catalonia region.
Oh, good.
Now, the ban takes effect January the 1st, but this weekend's fights were the last event of the 2011 season in the Catalan capital.
Well, that's great. I know we butcher and kill tens of thousands of them for a McDonald's hamburger, but something about watching it as a display was, it just seems so barbaric. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with you, so this is good news.
Yes, it is.
All right, now I have a whale of a mystery for you.
Uh-oh.
Brewster, Massachusetts. Now, marine biologists are trying to figure out how a 400-pound whale skull ended up on Ellis Landing Beach. Now, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, well, it's a little late for them to get involved, but they consulted with the New England Aquarium to see whether a whale stranding had occurred in the area in recent years. Because it is pretty strange for a 400-pound whale skull to wash up on the beach.
Yeah. Can't say that I've ever heard of it before.
Nor I.
But that doesn't mean anything. Okay.
All right. Now, here's some good news. Pensacola, Florida, the wildlife sanctuary of the Northwest Florida, reported that the number of ospreys in the panhandle has grown. Now, that indicates that the region has a healthy ecosystem. Now, in the past years, the eagle-like birds were a rare sight because pesticides had damaged their habitat and large-scale net fishing had depleted their food source.
Oh. You know, when I was in Santee Cooper fishing, I'm thinking 3 years ago, there were osprey everywhere. It was the most extraordinary thing. And they're all on nest, and it was absolutely unbelievable. So they're coming back in that part of the country now.
That's right, yeah.
Well,
that's
good.
A good sign for everybody concerned.
Absolutely.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, we reported on a monster crocodile that was caught in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do a little more research on the subject to make sure that, you know, we had all the information right. Well, here's the story. The monster crocodile is reportedly the world's largest and is the star attraction at its own nature park, which opened in the Philippines a couple weeks ago. Now, two huge crocodiles were sighted killing a water buffalo. And that's when they caught the one.
Yeah.
Now, the other croc that got away is believed to be 25 to 30 feet long.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes. Now, a pit that was originally excavated for the town's swimming pool was hastily converted into a water hole for the saltwater croc. Now, the Guinness Book of World Records declared an Australian crocodile was the largest in the world.
Yeah.
But they haven't measured this one yet because they won't measure it until it's in acceptable captivity.
How big do they think it is?
Well, the Australian or?
The one, yeah, the one in the Philippines.
Well, 21 feet and one ton.
Oh, my Lord.
A 21-foot, one-ton saltwater croc.
The Albuquerque the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico needs that croc.
I think they do. Maybe we can work out something.
Yeah, maybe we can.
Now, they've already started digging a pit for the other one. They plan on catching the second one, the larger one. And so they've already started digging a hole for him.
Well, it shouldn't be too hard as big as it is. Well, though, it still would be a challenge.
Yeah, no, I won't help you pull that one into that. No, I want to have nothing to do with that one.
You just need a strong rope.
All right, we're going to head out to God's country.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Where's that?
I think that's Colorado.
Oh, that's
no,
right.
We know that's Colorado for sure.
Yes.
All right, now, 26 black-footed ferrets from the National Zoo Conservatory Center in Fort Royal, Virginia, is sending 26 black-footed ferrets to Colorado to prepare for a life in the wild.
Oh.
Now, the species was once declared extinct.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is a good thing.
Yes. Where are they going to release them, have they said?
Well, no, see, that's going to be kept kind of a secret for now.
I'll bet it is. Let me guess. I would say Mesa Verde or Dinosaur National Monument. That'd be my first two guesses. We'll see.
We'll see, yeah. We'll find out here before too long.
Yeah.
All right. Now, if you need some help caring for your animals, ask for some help, okay? Lacey
okay.
Township, New Jersey. 4 Aldabra tortoises, 1 weighing 600 pounds, were seized from a home earlier this month and are being treated at the Popcorn Park Zoo for upper respiratory infections.
Oh.
Now, you just can't keep a turtle in your house on the carpet. It's just not a good thing.
No.
Now, they're going to try to find a permanent home for the turtles in a warmer climate.
Mm. Maybe that should be the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
There we go.
Okay.
We'll get Doug hooked up with that information. Maybe he can help them out.
There you go.
I think that's a great idea.
You betcha.
All right. Now, the Old Farmer's Almanac says the next 2 weeks are the best for fishing. Now, while we're talking about fishing, let's head off to Houston, Texas, where a fish caught by a preteen girl at a lake last month has been identified as a red-bellied piranha.
There you go.
Yeah, now that's the second piranha verified in Texas waters and the first in nearly 30 years. Now the hand-sized fish chomped down on a piece of, listen to this, hot dog used as bait at the lake at Tom Bass Park.
Yeah, somebody's aquarium pet was released.
Yeah, somebody's aquarium pet that likes hot dogs.
Well, they'll eat anything. I mean,
they'll
gracious.
Eat anything, but you shouldn't feed your piranhas hot dogs. No, it's just not
no.
a good idea.
No.
All right. Now, for you parrot owners, I want you to listen up to this. This is very important.
Okay.
Now, boredom can lead to madness in parrots. When caged by themselves and neglected for long periods of time, these intelligent social birds can easily become mentally ill. That happens with a lot of people, too. But
yeah.
Now, many will inflict wounds upon themselves, develop strange ticks, or, you know, rip out their own feathers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these birds, they need constant interaction, affection, and mental stimulation. Now, some bird authorities have determined that some parrot breeds have the mental abilities of a 5-year-old human child. Now, should a neglected parrot go mad, there is very little that can be done to restore its normalcy. Now, in England, there are mental institutions for such unfortunate creatures. Yeah. Yeah, now, you're involved in you're involved with the birds, aren't you?
Yes, we have 3.
And you're a member of the Indiana Bird Society?
Oh, well, we work with the Indiana Cage Bird Club. Yeah, we do work with them, and they contribute to us, and we love them. And, and it is a problem. Parrots, I can remember we had a parrot that decided, or a macaw, I should say, that decided it had a love affair with a skunk.
That's right,
And when the skunk passed away, the parrot literally plucked most of its feathers out, so...
I remember that.
Yeah.
They slept together underneath an old antique stove.
That they did, and if you dared try to touch that skunk, the parrot would attack you. So, yeah, they're weird. I can't help it.
All right, well,
it's
just
if you own a parrot,
spend some time with it.
Well,
that's the Wild World News for September 29th.
Well, we'd like to thank Dr. Henry Day once again, a masterful job with the Wild World News. We want to tell everyone, check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. You can join the group, and we encourage you to do so. Also, brand new underwriter, Cobalt Blue Press Bookstore in historic Knightstown, Indiana. The shelves are stocked with new, rare, and gently used books, including many hard-to-find children's titles. Whether it's your favorite author or subject, owner Shannon Dawson will find any book online for you. Contact her on Facebook, remember Shannon Dawson, or Twitter, or visit the store 7 days a week, free coffee, Wi-Fi, and a cozy reading area. It's cool. It's a great place. Cobalt Blue Press, corner of Main and Jefferson in Knightstown, Indiana. And also, by the way, Henry, they have thousands of antique postcards for your collection. Also, RadioMom.fm and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday. And listen to it on the Internet at RadioMom.fm. And also the iKids Fishing Show. That link is the iKidsFishing.com. Is the first kids fishing show in the U.S. of A., starring kids, teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending, listen to this, $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at that resort in Chautauqua Lake in western New York, We Want You Cottages. And their website is www.wewantyou.com. It's one of America's finest fishing resorts. And also McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. We call it God's country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And, folks, now is the time to go out there. I have been told that the aspens have just started to turn. The valleys and meadows are filled with elk. It's absolutely gorgeous. So make a reservation. Head out to McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Baby, if you got a rock, I gotta be your rockin' horse. If you'd like to roll, make me a singing pole. Now shake the world when it's time to crash.
Snake Shake tonight, everybody, from the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico, one of the top reptile experts in the country. Our guest tonight, all the way from his home out there in the warm country, Doug Hodel. Good evening, Doug.
Good evening, Larry. How are you?
Well, we're doing pretty good. How's Mr. Hodel tonight?
You know, I'm not too bad. Coming off a good day of work and just relaxing and talking to some old friends, so I'm glad to be here.
Well, so what happened at the zoo today, if you don't mind telling everybody?
Let's see. Oh, I got in some good snakes. You recall probably Jim Harrison lives down in Kentucky, Kentucky Reptile Zoo.
Absolutely.
He sent me up 10 of the, Colombian lancehead vipers,
mm-hmm.
which are really neat snake, very, very potent venom, kind of a neurotoxin and a hemotoxin, and about six of the Malayan pit vipers, and big tertiate pelo, big girl. She's a big, scary snake, kind of a venomous pogo stick, if you will, but a lot of fun. But
Where's neat animals. Where's that snake from?
That is out of South America as well. Yeah, it's one of the lanceheads down in there, related to the tertiate pelo, Faraday Lance, Bushmasters, all of those guys kind of fall in that same grouping.
Yeah. So you've been at the Albuquerque Zoo, well, I should say the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you're the head reptile guy in charge of the whole darn deal. How long have you been down there?
I have been here a little over a year now, Larry. I got here from Texas, and well, I tell you what, I hit the ground running here, and we just haven't stopped. We're doing a lot of good things and having a ball every day.
So what kind of reptiles are you keeping in that collection there in the Rio Grande Zoo?
Well, you know me, I get this I get the reputation around the country as being the venomous guy. So I've got a lot of hot snakes out there.
Snakes
being venomous. I brought a lot of my own, oddly enough, and put them on display when I moved here. Mambas, green mambas, black mambas, old puff adders, a lot of different rattlesnakes and such. So I probably brought out about 50 snakes of my own and put them on display when we got here. But we have a large variety of snakes all over the world. Really, we've got the cookie-cutter variety, the things that people want to see, the big reticulated pythons out of Asia. I've got a 12.5-foot king cobra. All the way up to, we have, as you were mentioning before, we've got some large saltwater crocodiles weighing in about 1,000 pounds apiece, some big boys.
You want that one from the Philippines, don't you?
You know, I do. I do. That's just the macabre in me.
I can't even imagine what it would be like to move and handle such a big, you really don't, do you, Doug?
You really can't. I mean, it's such a large animal, and really sedation is almost out of the question, too, because reptiles just don't do well under sedation.
Yeah.
And about the only way is if you can lure them into a crate or a trap or something like that and move them in that way. The way we work ours is they're very food-oriented, so we've got them trained to come through a shift door, one at the sound of a whistle, the other one at the sound of a cowbell. Very smart animals.
Uh-huh.
And as they're coming through the shift door, we've got a makeshift crate built that we just extend longer and longer and longer every few weeks. So they have to go through almost a tunnel or a simulated crate, if you will. That way, when it comes time to move them or do something with them, we can just crate them up, because I've wrestled my share of alligators, and that's something I just, I'm too old for that now.
Well, it would take, you know, a crocodile, 1,000 pounds, it would take 20 guys.
Oh, it would. It would be just darn near impossible to manipulate something like that. And certainly not without you getting hurt or the animal getting hurt. It's just it's certainly not worth the risk.
No. I can't remember whether it was a crocodile hunter's place in Australia. They had done the same thing where they'd use sound to train. They had trained Cuban crocodiles to go into a particular area when they needed to do the shots or whatever was involved to get
right.
them going to a shoot. And because Cuban crocs, do you have those in your collection?
No, I've worked with them in the past. That's a very jumpy animal as well. So, yeah, they would gladly leap up and take your arm off and not miss a beat. So very very scary animal. These big saltwater crocs. I've worked with a lot of animals over the years, but these are probably the most unique in that they're very primitive. This is about as dinosaur as you can get with these animals. And you look in their eyes, and there's nothing. There's nothing redeeming about this animal whatsoever, except for the fact that it's really cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they've got that that cerebral cortex that most reptiles don't have that allows them to reason, to figure things out, to sort things out. So I always tell my guys, not only will these crocs gladly eat you, but they're sitting in there every day trying to figure out a way to do it. So you always got to be on your toes. You can never, never give these guys a chance because they'll take it. They know the routine better than you do.
Oh, absolutely. And I've always had a debate in my own mind whether who is more intelligent, the tortoises or the crocodilians.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you mentioned Aldabra tortoises earlier,
mm-hmm.
and we've got a few of those, and this is just it's another extraordinary animal. These came in, the ones came in here as adults back in 1963, and they're still going strong, so we really don't know how long these tortoises live. I do know about 8 years ago, a tortoise, a big Galapagos tortoise died that was actually brought back on the Charles Darwin expedition on the Beagle, and it just recently passed away. So these things could live for 300 years. We don't know. So it's another remarkable animal, and they may be slow, but there's a lot more going on upstairs than we really give them credit for.
So I have to tell everybody that I've known Doug's, most of his life, because years ago when we had our place in Speedway, Indiana, Doug as a youngster would come around, and before anybody realized it, he was a part of the crew, and he helped maintain anything and everything over those years in Speedway, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, that was quite an adventure, and it was I always tell people that. I said, you know, I was a kid looking over the fence, and you guys came around the fence. Instead of running me off, you invited me in, and next thing I know, I was cleaning bear cages in trade for red rat snakes, and, you know, and I've never looked back since then. And, you know, wow, just what an incredible experience that I don't know that anybody could get anymore.
No.
But I'm thankful every day for it, that's for sure.
Well, one of the most intriguing stories that I recall from those days that you may not have told your fellow cohorts, but we had a couple Bengal tigers. Sergeant Barney. And Doug's responsibilities, he was usually the first one there every day, and he'd do all the early maintenance, and one of his responsibilities was to let the tigers out into their outside area and then give them fresh water and so forth. And you know, God love him, but if you recall, Doug, the outside gate wasn't quite closed.
Yeah, I kind of remember letting them out a little further than they probably should have gone that day.
And we received a phone call stating that Doug had let the tigers out, and we said, well, he's supposed to do that. He said, no. He let them out. And upon our arrival, there was Doug, and I don't even know how old you were then. You were young, and you had the wherewithal and the sense to grab a lead, and each tiger had a collar on it, and you hooked that tiger up to a collar, never really handling it before. And what do you think that cat weighed, Doug? 300-400 pounds?
Oh, yeah, that cat was easy pushing that. Yeah, he was a big boy.
So when we arrived, there was the cat just kind of lounging out, just kind of looking at Doug.
The best part, Larry, the best part is when the cat got out and I'm trying to get him contained, and Bob's mom was there working in the flower garden.
Yeah.
And she looked up and she says, well, what are you doing, honey? Taking him for a walk? And that cat just, you know how it is when someone's got their back turned to a cat. That's just, you know, they've got to go for that. And I thought, great, this cat's going to eat my boss's mom.
Well, you made sure that didn't happen.
That's right. And you're right, Larry. I don't really tell that story too often to my my employers.
Well, it's one that shows your dedication and your bravery. And
I do recall thinking for sure that I was that would be my last day there and being called into the office. And
no.
I got the we're glad to see you can handle yourself in a in that type of a situation lecture instead of the other. And that's something I carried with me all through my career. There's a lot of things that I learned there that I carried through my career, and I passed those on to animal people really all over the world.
Really?
And, And there's I recall a day with a spider monkey, Terry the spider monkey, and I had moved the fan, and I was sweeping behind the fan, and you had walked through, and you said, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm sweeping the floor. So what about the fan? Well, I just moved it for a second, and you said, well, how long do you think it takes a spider monkey to reach out and grab the fan? About a second. Yeah, and that stuck with me. And I relay that story to keepers all the time. It only takes an animal a second to do something to itself or do something to you. So if you think something could happen, don't do it. So I've carried that really all through my career.
Oh, I don't even remember that moment. Damn, I feel pretty bad.
I do very vividly.
Oh, I do remember the moment, though. I was in the snake room where we had a Burmese python that was not very, how do I put this? It was kind of temperamental. And we had just gotten it in, and I heard you in there working, and I heard that door. I said, Doug, watch out for that Burmese. Boom, boom. And the Burmese python had Doug. And I believe we had to go outside and take a hose and a pencil to pry off of it.
There were so many things that we worked with back then, Larry. I had a gal that worked for me at the Abilene Zoo, and I was talking to our veterinarian there, and we got to talking about kinkajous, and he said, well, you know, I had this kinkajou bite me, and he's like, well, you know, you've been bit by a kinkajou, and I was standing there for a second thinking, and the girl was there, and she's like, oh, my God, you have to think about that? And I'm like, well, yeah. She's like, well, how many things have bitten you? I was like, I don't know. My God, it's easier for me to think about how many things haven't bitten me, so...
Oh, yeah, I can remember looking. Somebody had a shirt of North American animals, and I looked at it and thought, I've been bitten by almost everything on that shirt.
No kidding.
Those are great days.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Well, our guest tonight from the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Doug Hodel. We're going to take a short break. Folks, you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, do you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters?
It's bobcat heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, not.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. We want to remind everybody that you can go back into the archives and listen to all the shows from the past as well as tonight's broadcast immediately after it is concluded at 11 o'clock. And we've had some great shows, and we encourage everyone to do so. And tell your friends, and also, why not become a friend of Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio? Next week's guest, We'll be back with Laura Cheadle from New Jersey. She's got a brand new live CD out. We'll be featuring that and talking to Laura, so it should be a great hour, so we encourage everyone to listen again next week. We want to thank Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call at 317-243-0700. And we encourage everyone to become an individual underwriter. Go to my website at LarryTheAnimalGuy.com and contact yours truly, Larry Batson, and we'll tell you how easy it is to be an individual underwriter on this wonderful broadcast that we have each week. Tonight's guest, all the way from Albuquerque, New Mexico, dear friend and longtime cohort, Doug Holo joins us. He's the head reptile guy at the Albuquerque Zoo. So do you ever get to play with the mammals? Do you ever get in those areas too, Doug?
You know, I do. I do a lot more. One of the unique things about, well, especially about my past, is that I have worked with just about everything at one time or another. So just today I sat in on a meeting about our elephants, and I get around quite often, giraffes and rhinos and all of that. If the head person is not in that area at the time, they usually give me a call and get my advice on that. So it's I like to stay very, very much involved in that. Of course, the big cats. I've always loved the big cats as well. So it's nice to have a wide interest like that, because it seems like you're always in demand.
Yeah. And usually there's not people available that are diversified in everything. Usually they're either a bird guy or a reptile guy or a big cat guy or great apes or primates.
That is so true. We tend to get in these careers, we tend to get very pigeonholed. And I've even seen reptile guys that only specialize in snakes or only in lizards or something.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's a shame. And if you really enjoy everything from ants to elephants, you're never really bored. And I'll go out snaking a lot of times at night here. It's too hot during the day for snakes, so at night the snakes come out and they lay on the roads, and we'll go out at night. And I'll talk to other people. Yeah, we went out last night, didn't see a darn thing, and they're complaining. And I'm like, well, you know, I saw some ringtails and a couple of porcupine and some great horned owls, and you know, I didn't see any snakes, but man, did I have a ball! And they're just not that. They're so close-minded to the rest of the world around them, and it's really a shame.
And you know, when you talk about going snaking on the roads at night, you know who is so envious of that and who would like to participate so much in that activity is our own studio producer, Melissa Hovey. In fact, she had told
me.
Yeah, she just would think, gosh, that would just be outstanding to do.
Well, I need somebody who can jump out and grab the rattlesnakes while I'm fidgeting with the radio. So she is more than welcome to come along.
Well, you know, I have the old snake story. We were down in Florida with our old friend and reptile collector, Ron DuPont. And he expressed to me that there was a particular road that they would run along the canals. And he had an old Volkswagen bus that was basically kind of chopped up to go snake hunting. In other words, you could sit in the front seat and you could bail out the side real easily. There was no doors in the way. And he expressed to me that on this particular road that ran along these two canals, that different times of the day and different parts of the road, certain species of snakes would be moving across this road. And it got so, he said, we have to keep moving because, you know, if you collect one snake, you jump back in the bus and you go down the road. And he did 30 miles an hour. I mean, you bailed out of that bus.
Really?
And he'd go, yellow rat snake. We'd run out, just not even look at it, just grab it, throw it in the bag, and get back in the bus, and ribbon snake. So I was getting ready to, he said, there's a Florida water snake on the right, and we're talking total darkness. And I was just getting ready to grab that thing when I said, put a light on it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a water snake. It was a nice, nice, healthy little pygmy rattlesnake.
Oh, boy, that would ruin your day real quick.
That would have ruined the day, that would have ruined the night, and that would have ruined the rest of the week.
For a long time to come.
Thank God they don't get 6 feet long or you'd be in big trouble.
Oh. No kidding. But you know, they've got, for their size, they really pack a punch.
They do.
They've got a very, very potent venom for their size, and mm-hmm. they cause a lot of amputations and a lot of disfigurements every year for their size. They're pretty bad little snake, you know, small package, but a big bang for sure.
Oh, absolutely. So,
yeah, guys, I'm gonna jump in here real quick before Larry gets me talked into something that I didn't agree to.
Oh, no, I'm looking at the calendar now.
Yeah, Larry knows how I feel about that kind of stuff. You know, if you have any, you know, great apes at your zoo, I'd be more than happy to come down there and spend a few days just watching them, but I won't be participating in any snake hunts.
Well, see, there's a difference between the great apes. The great apes are cute to look at, but a nice chimp will gladly hand you back your kneecap. So you might want to go with the snakes. So.
I said observe, not not play.
Well, I have to tell Doug the old story. Do you remember, Doug, a gentleman that used to come into the shop every once in a while named Mike Biggs?
Oh, yes.
Well, he was quite the animal handler. He's quite the animal trainer. And we had him on the show a few months ago because we were talking about chimps, especially after the terrible accident that happened up in Connecticut, and how he felt that there's no way that, you know, chimps should be kept in captivity as far as private individuals, not unless they're very specially trained. Yes. Because they're, how do we put this? They're bad whammer jammers.
Oh, yeah.
There ain't anything, excuse my English, there's not anything much tougher than a chimp.
Yeah,
scary. Well, he had rescued a chimp years ago down in Terre Haute, Indiana, which had basically crippled a lady, and they were going to euthanize it. And he took the chimp in, and he had great results with it. In fact, he trained it to mow his grass. It liked to drive the riding lawnmower. He had to mow the perimeter of the yard first, and then the chimp knew how far to go out. He said it did a better job mowing the grass than he did. He'd take it down to the local, the gas station where, of course, everybody met, and every world's problem was being solved by the citizens in Russellville, Indiana.
Sure.
And the chimp knew that when he went in there that he'd go up to the soda pop machine, and Mike would give him a quarter back then, that's the cost of a soda, and he'd pop it in there and he'd get him a soda and sit on the couch to drink a soda. And one day he got on the riding lawnmower on his own and drove down through town and went to the gas station by himself. And the guy knew, and he walked in to hand that monkey a quarter, or ape, I should say. And they called Mike up and they said, are you missing somebody? He's down here. But the funniest story when you were talking about the chimps was, Mike at that time operated a petting zoo, and they were getting ready to go somewhere, and they were loading up hay and straw and pine shavings and so forth. And the chimp was helping him because the chimp was basically full grown, and he was quite capable. Well, one of his buddies saw, the chimp's name was Sinbad, saw him walk up into the camper that Mike had, knowing that there was a refrigerator in there that had soda pops. So he followed the monkey, the chimp, into the camper, and Sinbad opened the cooler door, grabbed him a soda pop, opened it up, and the guy said to Sinbad, "Sinbad, should you have that?" Well, Sinbad turned around and looked at the guy, slammed the Coke to the table, followed the guy out of the camper, picked up a 2x4, and almost beat him to death.
You know, and that's, yeah. They are an extraordinary animal. They are there's very few animals out there that unsettle me, and chimps are definitely up near the top of that. There's just, once they decide they're going to make their move, there's not much you're going to do about that.
And wouldn't you agree, when you look in their eyes, that you see so much wisdom and so much intelligence that you feel so small around them?
You do. You really do. And they are highly intelligent animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I walk past them every day here at the zoo, and they're just, you know, a couple of them like me, a couple of them don't, and that's just a male-to-male thing. But, you know, God forbid they ever get out.
Oh, my Lord, it would be terrible.
Yeah, that would be a bad thing. I think I'd rather a big cat out than a chimp.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can move a big cat back in the enclosure with a pitchfork if you have to.
Yeah, cat usually wants to go back in.
A chimp will grab the pitchfork and take it from you.
That's right. Take your car keys and head out.
So, what's your favorite animal? Do you have a favorite among the whole bunch besides what's in the reptile department?
Wow, you know. That's always been like kind of asking who your favorite child is. And I've always said, you know, whatever's in front of me at the moment, because I still have that kind of that boyish thrill every time I'm with any type of animal that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was at, when I worked at San Antonio Zoo, my office overlooked this big, you know, tangle of vines outside, and they had all these little anole lizards in there.
Mm-hmm.
Used to call them chameleons back in the day.
Yeah.
And I would watch these guys, and I was sitting there one day, and I was just watching them battle for territory, and they had their whole little social thing going on out there. And I looked at the clock and realized, you know, I've been sitting there watching these things for 45 minutes. And 100 feet away, I have a pair of Komodo dragons, you know, the most awesome lizard on Earth, but I'm totally enthralled with these little anole lizards. And I just hope I never lose that passion. You know, and so, like I said, to pick a favorite, it's really, really tough. Although I've always been partial to, you know, some of the rattlesnakes and stuff. I really love these guys. But, boy, it's so hard to pick one just because I almost feel like I'm doing a disservice to the other ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I'm not giving everybody my full attention. So
what were the Komodo dragons like to work with and to be around and interact with?
They're really neat, and I've got a pair here. I've got an older pair here, and they're one of the first hatchlings out of the original ones that came out of Cincinnati
mm-hmm.
years ago. And these guys are really good. Now, the female doesn't want anything to do with you. She'll chase you back out of the exhibit. The male is big puppy dog-like. You can go in there and pull, you know, dead skin off his back and scratch him and, you know, move around.
Really?
He's really, really, yeah, he's a big laid-back puppy dog, and he's really neat.
Yeah.
They're all personal in their own way. We had a pair at San Antonio, and the male to get him in at night, we would literally have to go outside and chase him back in.
Mm-hmm.
And you go out, wave your arms and stuff, and he'd run back in, except for this one guy. He's this little Hispanic guy, and that lizard hated him with a passion.
Oh.
And he would just show his face at that door, and that lizard would charge him. So if we couldn't get him in, we'd be, hey, Adrian, come here.
He was bait.
But it's just funny. But you know, I've got cobras that hate certain individuals on my staff, and it shows you the level of thinking that sometimes we don't really afford these animals. But there's a lot more going on up there than we give them credit for.
Well, I can still remember when we would go to zoos and walk around, especially when we were out on tour when we were doing shows in different parts of the country, that if you wore those khaki clothes, I mean, you got the attention of every animal in the whole place.
Oh yeah, they know the keepers very well. They know the staff. And it's what I always tell my staff too: is these animals know the routines better than you do. So when
mm-hmm.
you break a routine and you do something out of character, usually, and especially if it's a smart animal, that's when it's going to make its move. So you've got to make sure that you're always one step ahead, and you've always got your mind in the game at all times. And you know, especially when we're dealing with these venomous snakes, we've got some of the deadliest snakes on Earth. And you know, when there's no other animal in the world that can kill you with a bite to any part of your body. You know, a jaguar bites you on the toe, you might lose your toe. Mamba
mm-hmm.
bites you on the toe, you're in for, you know, it's not going
right.
to end well. So, you know, I have to explain this to these guys over and over and over. Don't ever get out of your groove. Always be on your best guard with these things. And, you know, I've got a really good staff here, and they're pretty sharp with it. So, you know, we have our days. You know how animals are. They about once a week you'll get a scare. And you know, I was doing the venom lab over in Texas one day, and I was battling a big forest cobra. And our director happened to walk through, and he watched me fight this snake for about 10 minutes, and he came back in afterwards. He said, "Oh, boy, that scared me to death." And I said, "That didn't bother me." And he goes, "No, that snake was trying to kill you." And it's like, they always try to kill me. That's their job. My job is to not get killed. And I liken it to that old Bugs Bunny cartoon where the dog, the sheepdog, and the guy would come in and clock in the morning and go at it. So
that's
kind of how it is. So.
Well, I can still remember one of my most, I don't know, at the time when it was occurring, I didn't really think that much about it. But after I'd finished the task, we had a Chinese cobra that was about, I don't know, Doug, it was probably 5-6 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And we took off about 8 eye caps.
Yeah.
And I have to explain to our listeners, when the snakes shed their skin, you know, basically they shed everything. There's a part of the skin that covers their eyes, and we call that the eye cap, and then they shed it all the way down to their tail. Well, for some reason, this snake would not shed its eye caps. So the procedure for this is that you grab the snake, you hold it by its head, and then you take a piece of scotch tape and you wrap it around your finger, sticky side out, and you basically pop these eye caps off one at a time while you're holding the snake. And it's, how do I say this?
Yeah, that is the most dangerous time to be working with the snake is when you're up, when you physically got it restrained like that, and you're up right there in his face, and that's where it happens. You know, I've had my share of bites over the years, and you know, only one happened by a snake I didn't even see. The other ones happened literally while I was up in the snake's face.
Yeah,
and it's a nerve-wracking thing, and something people
is.
Won't do. So, but
yeah.
Somebody's
got to
do it, I guess.
Oh, well, that's right. And when you're doing it, you don't think anything about it, but when you finish the task, you go, oh, that was kind of...
Many times I've sat down and go, you know, I just handled some of the most dangerous stuff on Earth, and it's not even lunch yet.
All right, I know. But you know, you have to love your job. And I know Doug is so dedicated, and the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I'm jealous of them because they've got a good guy taking care of their reptiles, absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you, Larry.
It's I've seen him at work, and he does a fantastic job.
I love it out here, and it's such a beautiful area, very rich in wildlife diversity. We can go out. We do a lot of field work with some of the endangered species here down in southern New Mexico. And in the one day we were out, we literally saw elk, we saw javelina, we saw bear, we saw, you know, just literally everything that there was to see, rattlesnakes, everything. And it's just such a magnificent area of the country, and really everywhere in the country is for its own thing.
Right.
But you can't beat the Southwest when it comes to sunsets and rattlesnakes, that's for darn sure.
And Albuquerque is kind of in a bowl. I mean, it's surrounded by mountains on the one side of town, and it just, because I can remember flying over those mountains to go into Albuquerque years ago. And in fact, we were so lucky at that time when we did something with the Albuquerque Zoo, or the Rio Grande Zoo. I keep calling it the Albuquerque Zoo. We were able to get a spotted, do you still have spotted hyenas?
Yes, we do. We do, yes.
Any babies?
Oh, well, no babies at the moment.
Well, you'll let me know?
I will. I recall the hyena we had out there at your place.
I do, too.
That's another interesting animal there. That's, those things will eat a car fender. They're something else.
Well, I have to tell you that our good friend Mike Biggs, when we got the as it grew up, we were never able to use it in wildlife lectures because when we got it, it was just too old, and we needed to start a little bit younger than that. But he kept it for us for at least a couple of years before it went to a breeding facility in Idaho. But that we gave it a bowling ball, and it would chew it up into pieces the size of a quarter.
Yeah.
it would bite the end out of cinder blocks.
Yeah, I had some out at the Abilene Zoo, and they would constantly chew up their water bowl. So one day I made this big fancy water bowl out of all this rock, artificial rock work, literally this reinforced concrete.
Yeah.
And my keepers came back the first day, and they said, well, they ate your water bowl. I said, what do you mean they ate my water bowl? They said, no, they really ate your water bowl.
Oh, they're
incredible
brutal.
Animal.
Oh my!
Oh yeah, Lord. and they digest everything. You know, they digest horns and hooves and everything. Just a really neat animal. Neat animal.
Well, Mike told a story that he had a visitor out there one day, and they walked toward the hyena, and the hyena didn't really like the visitor, and he had in there about a 12-foot log chain, a big heavy log chain. Well, the hyena grabbed it in the middle and started shaking that log chain. And he said you had to stand back because of the rocks that log chain would spit up from that hyena shaking it so violently. I mean, and of course the vocalizations are just the brutalest. I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's such an interesting animal. I mean, especially if you really start to get into their social dynamics when they're, you know, even, I mean, the hierarchy starts from when they're born going on up, and it's an incredible animal.
So
what, and again, what animal isn't? So.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right. So what's the Albuquerque or Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico got on the calendar? What's coming up that we need to tell everybody about?
Well, I tell you what, I got the green light today. We're working on a new amphibian building,
mm-hmm.
and I have probably 25 to 30 frog amphibian, you know, salamanders, Antiuma, that type of thing. And mm-hmm. we're going to really highlight the whole crisis. You know, we've lost so many frog species in the last 20 or 30 years. At the rate we're going, probably before our children's lifetimes are over, we won't have any frogs left on the earth. So
wow.
we're trying to highlight this, and we're trying to make people aware. Education is truly the key to conservation. So we're going to start on this. We're hoping to have it done and opened up by fall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other than that, it seems like we've got something going on every day. Animals being born. We just had a new giraffe born the other day. That's quite a way to come into the world, dropping 6 feet on your head. But,
oh, Lord.
So, of course, I was accused of being dropped on my head, too, a lot. So, it seems like we've always got something going on out here. The biopark is we're a combination of the zoo. We're a botanical garden. We have a refugium where we work on some endangered fish here in the area. And we also have a large aquarium complete with sharks and the whole works. So it's quite a really dynamic little place that we have over here. And it's really kind of a gem of the Southwest over here. So if I highly encourage anybody out in this area to stop by and see us.
Well of course. And if I ever get that way again, which I hope to one day, you never know. I might wander in through those front gates and say, where's Doug at? And
that's right.
He says he's with the snakes.
I'm usually not hard to find, that's for sure.
Well, you're not. And it was such a thrill, and it was great to have you on the program tonight. And gosh, what a wonderful hour, Doug. It's Doug is a dear friend. I've known him, like I said, all of, I don't even know. You're old now, Doug.
Yeah, I don't know. People ask me sometimes, well, how long have you been doing this? And it's like, mm-hmm. I don't even know. I vaguely remember something about grade school, and that was about it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can say close to 40, so you're not far behind that. I know that's for sure. But it's just outstanding. Good show, Dr. Day.
No kidding. You know, it's great. The young man that we knew so many years ago has come so far and done so much. And in those days, we didn't know if he was going to live to the next day. Right? I mean, right?
They still don't, Dr. Day. They still don't.
Yeah, exactly. But, Doug, it's so great to hear from you after all these years.
Oh, it's hurt. Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, Doug, be sure you set aside a time. When is the best time for Melissa Hubby to come out and go snake collecting with you?
Well, you know, anytime this spring coming up, the rattlesnakes will be coming out of their dens by the hundreds.
Really?
So that's usually a good time. You could be up to your hips in rattlesnakes in no time at all.
Well.
Okay, well, wait a minute. I changed my mind. I don't want to come down to look at the apes. I want to come down and see the sharks.
Okay, well, yeah, come on by and see the sharks. We'll go over there, and there's probably snakes back behind the building, too. We can, if there's snakes back there, I can find them for you.
No, I don't want snakes.
Well, we'd like to thank Doug Hodel all the way from the Rio Grande Zoo in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for sharing this hour with us. What a fantastic hour. We want to tell everyone that next week on the program, Laura Cheadle will be joining us way up in New Jersey, and we're going to be talking to her and also her brand new live CD, which is, I've heard it. She sent me a copy. Pretty darn good. Have a great week, everybody. This is Larry Batson, and you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.